I'm a member of the ODFTC, the metadata and the formula subcommittee and the adoption TC, and a member of V1, which is the representative of the United States on SC34. I'd like to talk to you today some comparisons, technical comparisons between open document format and Office Open XML, or ECMA Office Open XML. One of the two standards that are both kind of vying for our attention for document formats based on XML. I'll be looking at it from a wide variety of perspectives, you know, time permitting, both historical as well as looking at the technical capabilities and, you know, how these standards can evolve. Before we get too far into it, I'd like to just go over a little bit of the history that we probably all experienced over, as I say, the past 20 years. And that's looking back to the 80s and early 90s in the age of proprietary formats, which I like to think of as kind of the castle with the moat around it. These are standards created by a single vendor, controlled by a single vendor, and evolved by a single vendor. And back then, all vendors were like this, whether it was Lotus, whether it was Microsoft, whether it was WordPerfect. You know, these were proprietary binary formats. But there was, you know, a little bit of points of light, and it's kind of interesting to consider, you know, what these meant and why they succeeded to the extent they did and why they didn't go further than that. If you look at 1987, Microsoft came out with this rich text format specification. Before that, if you wanted to exchange rich text between documents, you were kind of out of luck. All you could really do is export to ASCII, import as ASCII, lose all your formatting. And then there was this rich text format. It worked to a certain extent, but it never really encompassed the full feature set of the application. Because of that, you know, it never really went any further than that. And I think what we need today is we need to make sure that we have formats that we can use for interchange that are go far beyond what rich text format did of just bringing over the text with formatting, but brings the structure of the document, the headers, the footers, you know, the whole semantic content that the user put into the document. If you think back far enough, and is there anyone here who's worked on the filters in openoffice.org? Okay, great. If you think back far enough, we actually had public documentation on the binary file formats. There was a book that came out in 1997, the Microsoft Developers Excel Developer's Handbook, that had Excel file format documentation. Microsoft Developer Network CDs had format documentation. It was on the website. It came with Visual C++ bundled. But at some point, you know, we stopped getting updates to that documentation, and it was pretty much pulled from, you know, public access. And the question is, you know, what happened? How did something that was a proprietary format, then a documented proprietary format, how did it then become an obscure binary format that no one really had access to the doc? You know, I look at it a couple of steps. First one was around 1998, where the door was shut. If you read, this is the license on MSDN. You may use the documentation identified in the library, you know, the file format specification, solely in conjunction or connection with your development of a software product that operates in conjunction with Windows or Windows NT, so long as it's not a general purpose word processor, spreadsheet, or database management. So in other words, you can use the file format documentation as long as you're not competing against Windows or against Office. So that's kind of the first thing that happened to shut the door. Then in 1999, the documentation just wasn't available at all on MSDN. It was kind of pulled all together. And if you went to the website, you saw text like this that described various licensing programs. It said if you wanted the documentation, you could write, fill out an application form, and get it provided. And there's that magic last sentence, to complement Microsoft Office. And I can pretty much guarantee you that if you're creating a competing Office suite and you're giving it away for free, it's not considered complementary to Microsoft Office. Well, once the door is locked, next step is to post a guard at the door. And I look at some of the stuff happening with digital rights management as, you know, locking the door. You know, even if you don't have the documentation, the stuff you can do with reverse engineering. Some of the DRM stuff, Digital Millennium Copyright Act stuff, says even if you wanted to, you can't reverse engineer it. So, you know, we've had a lot of heroic progress, and I look at the stuff that we have in openoffice.org today as some of the best conversions I've ever seen of the proprietary binary formats into an open format. And, you know, hats off to the gentleman who did that work. I used to do work like that at Lotus many years ago, and it was very difficult stuff to do. But we're sort of at the point now where you really can't go forward with that, you know, once you start mixing DRM into the mix. So that's kind of the history of what we had up to the open document. Open document, the first big format to say, here's a publicly available specification, standardized, you know, with IP rights to use it, and done in a way that's, you know, not based on these old proprietary binary formats, you know, fully documented. A review of kind of the standardization process, and if you, I mean, how many people here went to Michael Brower's presentation at 11? Okay, so you all know pretty much what happened on the left-hand side of that chart there. The right-hand side shows a similar process that's happening with Office Open XML, and you'll notice it's very similar, kind of a parallel evolution. Where ODF is based on the Open Office and the Star Office formats before that, Office Open XML is based on the reference schemas of Office 2003, where that was kind of the base submission that they submitted to ECMA. Open Office submitted back in 2002, this one 3 years later, 2005. I'm making an estimate here of when it will be standardized by ECMA. ECMA process has a general assembly twice a year where they vote on specifications. Next one's in December. I'd expect that the Office Open XML would be voted on by ECMA by the end of the year. Pardon?
That's the target.
That's the target? Okay. So I'd expect that. And then you'd expect shortly after which that would be submitted to ISO, IEC, JDC 1, same organization that we submitted Open Document to. Slightly different procedures where ODF went through something called publicly available specification rules. The ECMA specification would probably go through something called Fast Track. It's a different set of directives, but it pretty much amounts to the same thing unless you're really into, you know, studying ISO process. The net is the ECMA specification will take a minimum of 9.5 to 12.5 months to work its way through the process. And then if that happens, you would expect a standard in ISO Q1 2008. I say if it goes according to expectations, it's not at all certain. Gartner's forecasting low approval of likelihood of approval. I mean, that remains to be seen. You can see there are differences in size, open document format. A summer of 6-page specification done in around 2.5 years. At the current progress, the Office Open XML specification is over 5,000 pages done in 254 days. And those are the numbers as of the draft 4 that came out maybe a month ago. That's kind of a head-to-head comparison of the two in terms of the standardization process. A little comparison of the two standard development organizations. You know, OASIS and ECMA may not be household names. ECMA maybe a little bit more because of ECMA script. But those are some of the specifications that they've standardized before. OASIS doing DocBook and DITA, relaxing, EBXML, LegalXML are some of the most prominent examples. OASIS has a definite emphasis on e-business standards. ECMA's done some stuff from Microsoft before, C-sharp, CLI, Netscape's earlier submission of ECMA script, the Eiffel programming language. They're also known for doing media and hardware standards. And I guess you could say ECMA's been around a bit longer too. They used to go by the full name European Computer Manufacturers Association, and they were doing hardware standards for quite a while. It's interesting to compare how open is. I mean, we talk about open standards and open processes for doing standardization. A little chart there showing, you know, what's involved in the technical committee work. And I'm looking at, you know, can individual members join? Is there open source community representation? Are the mailing lists used by the technical committee viewable by the public? Are the meeting agendas and minutes public? And is the public comment that people send in on the specification, is that viewable by the public? And I actually make one correction here, I think I should say. Here I say OASIS yes to all, ECMA no to all. I believe actually the minutes of the face-to-face meetings, at least in ECMA, are later published. I don't know about the phone calls. But for the most part, I'd say, having worked in OASIS, it's a much more sociable group. Therefore, the graphic. We have a lot of open source representation. If you've heard of groups like the Open Document Foundation and Open Document Fellowship, they're heavily represented in RTC. And I think that's something new and exciting, where we're starting to see individuals banding together outside of any, you know, big corporation. This isn't IBM, this isn't Sun, these are individuals getting together and deciding to engage the standard in the standards organization, which with a lot more organization and skill than I've seen in the past. another thing I look at is, comparing the two, is reuse of standards. And I like this quote of Newton. I later read someplace that he actually is quoting someone else, just showing a little bit of reuse there. And if I've seen a little further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. And I think that's what we've done a lot of with Open Document, reusing existing standards where we could. And I list some bullet items of a few reasons why this is a very good idea. It reduces the time to write the specification, results in higher quality specification, because the specification's already been, one that you're reusing has already been carefully reviewed and approved. You can leverage the existing expertise in the community, existing training materials, books, etc. Better interoperability. If you're using, you know, MathML as a specification for representing equations, you're going to have a better opportunity to interact with other applications that use that same ML. And you know, it's all around the network effects. The more people that use the standard, the more good things happen. And the next chart shows a comparison of some of the major standards that are reused. Michael, I know you went through this on the earlier presentation, but in ODF, we're using, you know, Dublin Core, XSL formatting objects, SVG, MathML, XLink, Smile, and XForms. My reading of the Office Open is that they're mainly reusing, you know, the Dublin Core for metadata. Those are the open standards that they're reusing. They're obviously reusing a lot of stuff from within Microsoft based on their experience with the file formats going back, you know, several decades, and they're reusing a lot of their older schemas, but they're not reaching out and reusing, you know, other XML schemas that are already open standards. Packaging. This is something actually where the two formats are a lot more similar than other parts. We're both using a zip container file, and this gives a good balance of compression, you know, and runtime speed. It works well with existing tools. And, you know, credit where credit's due, Microsoft did not use their proprietary CAB format that they've used for a number of other things, so it's good to see them go with zip here. One loose end that I'd like to see cleaned up at some point on both formats is the zip format itself is not an open standard. We can't point to a standards body that has stewardship over zip. It's been around for 18 years, never formally submitted. You know, there was the tragic early death of its author. Right now, if there is a specification, it seems to be owned by PKWare, but I'd like to see that get under some sort of formal standardization. Some comparative metrics. You know, it's hard to compare two formats just by themselves because it's very easy to slip into comparing the applications rather than comparing the formats. So I wanted to find some way that I could look at just the formats. So what I did is I took 176 Word documents, and just to prove that there was no bias in my selection of documents, I took them from ECMA's TC45's document library, converted them all to Office Open XML and to ODF format, and wrote a Python script and collected a number of statistics, you know, the number of pages in each document, the size of the zip file, number of contained files, just kind of gross metrics that give some indication of, you know, how well each of them compresses and how complex each one is. And that's just a quick chart showing you the a histogram showing the page count of the various documents. As you can see, most of the documents there are very short documents. They're the two or three page agenda documents, and then you get a smaller number of very large documents. So I think it's typical for a lot of companies that, you know, most of the documents are very short. Average page size here was 34 pages, median page size 8 pages. And then what you see in this chart, the size of the original doc file, you know, the binary Word file along the x-axis, and the y-axis is the compression ratio. And what we see with ODF is an average compression ratio of 0.38. And if you see here, it's kind of, very short documents have a wide range of compression sizes, but for most of the documents, it's down around here. I mean, out there. You do the same thing with the Office Open XML files, you get a median compression of 0.5. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I mean, it's the absolute size that matters in the end, not so much how much it was compressed, but it shows that there's an important enough difference in the XMLs that one is giving a much greater compression than the other. And we'll get back to kind of the reasons for that later. And this is another histogram showing know, the number of times each compression ratio. So you can see it's a wide range. Sometimes we get a compression ratio. This is a ratio of the open document size to the Office Open XML size. You can see for most documents, the ODF one's clearly compressing at a greater frequency. There's only a handful that Office Open XML compress more. Actually, I'll just show you one weird thing. It was actually one of the files over here, when the Office Open XML actually ended up, the zip file ended up larger than the original file. And I assume that was some artifact of maybe having a very large number of embedded JPEG images or whatever that were already compressed. It just shows weird things can happen with compression. So average ratio of ODF size to doc size 0.38, 0.5 compression ratio for Office Open XML. The net is that the ODF documents were smaller on average, 72% of the size of the Office Open XML. I did a quick double check of this just doing an empty file, creating a file, save it, look at the size, and got a very similar number there. So that's it on packaging differences. I'll look at platform application neutrality. And I won't go into great depth with ODF because I don't have to show platform neutrality. We have obvious ports of Office, you know, OpenOffice on multiple platforms. We also have multiple independent implementations of ODF. Situation with Office Open XML is not so clear. The hard thing with this, I mean, I admit it, I have not read the entire 6,000-page specification. I don't know anyone who has, but I'm sure that there probably are heroic people out there. I just don't know them personally. So I take an approach of searching the specification for certain keywords. And if I'm looking for something that indicates some vendor or platform, you know, lack of neutrality or application bias in it, I'm going to look for phrases like this. So I went through the specification looking for things like blob and bit, implementation defined, undefined, legacy, backwards compatibility, reserved, etc. I just want to give you a quick summary of some of the things I found in the Office Open XML specification. If I just said the word dev mode, does that mean anything to anyone? With printing? Okay, it's kind of something, unless you're writing print support code in Windows, which I did years ago for freelance graphics, it's not something you hit a lot with. Essentially, it is the in-memory structure that represents how your printer is configured, you know, what printer settings. I said run it on draft mode, and I want it printed duplex, and I want, you know, whatever settings you did in your printer settings dialog. Office Open XML stores that dev mode structure in a blob, in a binary part, as they call it, but it's essentially a binary blob in the zip file. And, you know, that's an obvious tie to Windows. Dev mode makes no sense anywhere else in the universe other than on Windows. In fact, it says external documentation can be found here, broken reference, CMSDN reference material. Another one, I'm not quite sure what to make with this. The original says, this is dealing with clipboard data formats. Why clipboard formats are stored in the file, I'm not quite sure. But it says the CF element specifies a base64 binary clipboard data variant type. The format attribute specifies the clipboard data. It must be -3, -2, -1, 0, or any positive integer. The specification really doesn't say why you would want to choose any particular integer at all. I mean, you'd really have to go into your Windows header file to figure out what exactly a clipboard format of -3 is. So it's not really defining what the clipboard formats are, just restricting them to seemingly arbitrary numbers. This is passwords in a spreadsheet. You can password protect the entire document. You can also password protect a given worksheet or a revision in the spreadsheet. They say the hash used, and this is the hash in order to verify that you've entered the correct password, depends on the application. Microsoft Office Excel uses cyclic redundancy check, CRC algorithms to compute the hash from the string. The CRC is generated from an 8-bit wide character. 16-bit Unicode characters must be converted down to 8 bits before the hash is computed. That has a couple problems. If you've done any encryption, a CRC algorithm is not defined unless you give the polynomial as well as the bit length. So saying it's just 8 bits leaves approximately an infinite number of ways of doing it. You also need to specify exactly how the Unicode characters are supposed to be downcast from 16 bits to 8 bits. Are we supposed to just hex encode them, throw out the hide bit, 2 bytes for each character? That really doesn't say. So it's nice that it says how Microsoft Excel does it, except it really doesn't. Here's an interesting parallel. So this is a C data structure taken from the Windows API for a locale signature for a font. And you can see it's a structure, has an array of 4 double words, you know, 4 32-bit integers, 2-bit default, or two default values, and then something called supported CSVs. In the XML, it's pretty much exactly the same thing. I mean, see, they take out each one of those D words, USB 0, USB 1, USB 2, USB 3. They don't seem to store the default, but then they have the CSV 0, CSV 1 as hex code. Well, nothing wrong with that. I mean, reuse what you have. But if you look at the documentation for what those D words are, it says specifies a 4-digit hexadecimal encoding of the first 32 bits and the 64 code page bit, blah, blah, blah. And then each bit in this 32 bits represents the following code pages, and this actually goes on for pages. But the interesting thing I found is, why are we doing bit masks in XML? I mean, if you're not familiar with bit masks, it says take a 32-bit integer and assign a different logical value or logical meaning, a different semantic to every bit in that integer. It was a great way of compressing space back when we had, you know, short pointers in Windows 3.1, but I mean, I don't see why that's an issue now. Does it even work with XML tools? Can you do a get and a set? Can you do a binary and a binary or in tools like XSLT that you could process bit masks? And I don't think you can. It's not a very XML-like thing to do. So that's just some examples. And, you know, I invite you to take a look at the specification, search for keywords like that or other ones you might have to see if you find other nice things like that. Here's something where actually I think Office Open XML, you know, to be a little bit fair, where Office XML has done more than ODF has done in this area, and this is the definition of what they mean by compliance. This is stuff that came out in a lot more detail in the draft 1.4 Office Open XML specification, so I haven't fully digested it, but I want to give you a little preview of what's there. ODF says documents may contain elements and foreign namespaces, and that consumers must be able to read any document that would have been valid if you remove that foreign markup, and they're allowed to preserve that content if they wish. And that's pretty much all that's said about conformance. It's kind of a loose definition. It works. Compared it to, here's the kind of implied validation pipeline. You load the XML, remove the elements that are not part of the ODF namespace, and then validate what remains. ECMA specification is in part 5 of the recently released draft. Much more complex. You know, what I just described in a few sentences takes 37 pages, and essentially it's this new markup language that they've layered on top of their existing XML called a markup compatibility ML. And what it is, it's adding additional elements and attributes, things like ignorable and must understand, which you would put in the root element of your document. You would say, here's a list of namespaces that you're free to ignore. If you do not understand the content in this namespace, ignore it. Alternatively, you could say, you must understand this markup in these namespaces. If you do not understand this namespace, then you have to throw an error. There's also ways of specifying that certain elements or attributes should be preserved, meaning when you edit and resave the document, they should be written out again, even if they're things you don't understand. And that's not a silly thing, as you imagine. There's a lot of good reasons for forward compatibility and backwards compatibility where you might want to do something like that. There's also this process content, which we don't have to go into. Also something very similar to a switch case default construct, where they have an element called, it works, I think, alternate content element that inside you can list several choices. And I'll give you an example of kind of an XML file of, that they give in the specification for how this actually looks like. Can you see that? Okay, so here we're seeing some XML. Main element here is circles, and it's defining a couple namespaces. If that doesn't cut off, okay, a V1 namespace, a V2 namespace, a V3 namespace. and then the market compatibility namespace that allows them to use the market compatibility markup. And then they say here, ignorable V2 and V3. So that means if you're an old consumer of markup, so you're, say, Office 2007, and you only are able to validate against the Office 2007 schemas, but then you're presented with an Office 2010 document that has additional things defined in namespace V2 and V3, you're free to ignore them, process what you do understand. And then here's what I mean by kind of a switch statement. You can put alternate content, and you can say, here's a choice. If you happen to understand V3 content, meaning you're running, say, Office 2010, then process this markup. You could have multiple. You could say, if you understand V2, process this markup, etc. And then if you don't understand any of those, here's the fallback. That's kind of the concept of their API there. It has a much more complex validation pipeline, if you can imagine. And that's kind of what's implied by this choice. I won't go through that in too much detail. It's in part 5 of the specification. My take on it is an intriguing idea. The current version still was a draft. It doesn't seem fully baked. There were a couple places where I was saying, you know, when I read it, this is ambiguous. It could mean one thing or it could do another thing. It gives a lot of, and I'm wondering whether it's too much flexibility in negotiating fidelity of representation based on the capability of the consumer. The main danger I see is it essentially allows a producer to rewrite the standard and the schema outside of a standard setting. Because there's so much flexibility. I mean, ordinarily when you sit down in a standards body and you write a specification and give it to ISO, it means what it says it means. If this can be changed on the fly through, you know, this complex set of compatibility APIs, it kind of says what does standardization mean. You know, could it, for example, enable Office to maintain a two-tier file format with the high fidelity version not documented and the low fidelity version available only in the fallback elements? And remember when I discussed RTF about how that was sort of successful but not completely? I mean, you could almost have something like that where the low format version or the low fidelity version is what's specified, but Office would still understand, you know, its own private formats. I'm not saying they are doing that, but I'm saying, you know, flexibility is flexibility. Performance. This was a tricky one. I mean, many of you have probably seen a report on ZDNet from last year looking at very large spreadsheet file and comparing the load performance in Office versus OpenOffice and saying that because of this, ODF was, the format was too slow. And I think it's very dangerous to confuse the performance of a format, to what extent there is such thing as performance of a format, with the performance of the application. So I tried to drill in and say, what could you do that would just be purely performance of the format? And there are a number of factors to take into account. One would be, you know, the number of XML files in the zip. You know, the more XML files that need to be parsed, you know, the slower it will be to load. Obviously, the size of the XML files, additional understanding that must be done to, you know, resolve your validation pipeline, such as processing ignorable and must understand elements. You know, it's hard to give an absolute number that says this format's this many times faster than another one, because not every application is doing the same thing with a format. The little bit of code that, you know, presumably Google has or will have for indexing an Office Open document is going to do a different set of things than Office itself will. So you really have to say, what is your particular use? That's also a licensing problem. You know, the only implementation of Office Open XML is the Office 2007 beta, and the end user license agreement specifically says you cannot disclose the results of any benchmark tests, which kind of puts me in a quandary because, you know, Microsoft can write all sorts of stuff about how theirs is faster, but I can't do anything about it.
So you couldn't even write an article about it in a magazine?
If that's considered disclosing the results of a benchmark test.
So there is no fair use?
I'm not a lawyer, but that's what it says. And this, I wouldn't say, and let's not pick on Office 2007 beta. This is standard language in pretty much all of Microsoft's betas. This isn't something they just put in just to vex me. The same result. So the solution I had, which was, let's test the XML directly. Let's not even execute Office as part of the test. So I took those same 176 documents from the ECMA TC45's document library, convert to ODF in Office Open XML. Just like I collected the static data before, I also ran a script in Python, repeated each one 10 times, took the average, and looked at the runtime difference. How long does it take to load every XML document in the zip file and parse it? A lot of applications, that's going to be the very base thing you do. The first thing you do, you load it, you have to load all the XML and parse it. If an application doesn't need to load all the XML, then why was that XML there? So a couple more static statistics that kind of show why we got the results we did. So this one's showing a scatter plot. Along the x-axis is, for each of those 176 files, I'm plotting a point that says, here's how many files were in the zip archive. And on the y-axis is, in the same document in Office Open XML, how many things were inside the zip file. And it came up that on, you know, a pretty nice linear relationship there, but on average, the Office Open XML had around 6 more files than the ODF files. You know, that's going to have an impact on parsing. Now, I took a look at the total size of the XML. So I say exclude all the images and any binary stuff that's in the file and look just at the XML documents and look at what the uncompressed size of them are. When you're parsing, it's uncompressed. Your parse speed is going to be, you know, proportionate to the size of the XML. In this case, it's around 82K greater and then a factor of 1.5. So we're seeing a pretty good relationship that says on average the XML in ODF is quite a bit smaller than the XML in Office Open XML. Net effect on parse time. So this is saying take each one zip file, parse all the XML in it, and time how long it takes. Repeat 3 times so you're not biasing, you know, based on how many times it's been executed or file caches or stuff like that. And the net was, for this benchmark at least, 3.5 times slower was the Office Open XML for parsing the XML in the zip archives. A little bit more detail on that. This is showing the ratio on the right, the ratio of the Office Open XML to ODF time. You know, what the ratio is as a function of page size. So you're seeing that for most documents, or I should say this long tail here, it's kind of showing, you know, around 4 times slower with Office Open XML. But for very short documents, it seems to be much more scattered. And in fact, I'm asserting that there's some sort of bimodal behavior where there's a clumping here of some documents where Office Open XML is like 9 and a half times slower, whereas there's another clumping of very short documents where it's around 2 or 3 times slower. And you see that on the histogram as well. Performance conclusion, you know, I'd say dealing with any of these formats, your choice on XML parser is key. It's not going to be the standard XML processing where you're taking a very large document and parsing it. You're going to be parsing a lot of smaller files, especially with the ECMA standard. You know, most parsers are not going to be well optimized for parsing many very small files. There's kind of a fixed startup cost. Also, always be a wise consumer of benchmark data. I'm giving you numbers for one test. You can come up with an equally valid scenario that could give you a different set of results. You just have to ask yourself whether you'd be legally allowed to report those results. You know, look to see if the documents used in the test are typical. I don't think the ZDNet spreadsheet was particularly typical. It was a very huge document. As I saw from looking at the ECMA documents, most documents in use there were very small. And consider the performance of all types of applications, you know, not just the heavyweight desktop editor. You know, for every document you create and save with OpenOffice, there could be half a dozen other applications that will index that, that will convert it into HTML, that will validate it. You know, most of the things that touch a document may be, you know, short pieces of Python script. Okay, well, that could be the end, or if you want, I mean, it's up to you. We could do questions now, or I could take you through a walkthrough of a comparison of the XML of kind of a parallel document in ODF and Office Open XML and kind of give you the tour. Does anyone have a preference?
Tour.
Yep. Tour? Okay. just show you what the document looks like first. What I want to do is a document that had no file conversion involved at all. So I created the same document by hand in Office as well as in OpenOffice. I made one that just kind of gives a, you know, a header, some basic text, some style text, basic numbered list and bullet list, a simple table, an override, a mathematical formula, a hyperlink, a footer, a self-portrait, and this is actually done as an Olay, example of an Olay embedding, and then a JPEG of a lunar eclipse on the day the Red Sox won the World Series. And I did that in both formats. And you can see that they're both, they both look the same, you know, from a UI perspective. And then the question is, how do they both look from the XML perspective? Let's take the, let's do the ODF one first. So I'm going to just say open that with WinZip. So the first thing we see here is that's 14 files. Why don't I open the other one as well? Versus 27 files. So this is not a conversion artifact or anything. This is the actual document, 27 files, 114 files. Whenever you look at an ODF file, you really want to start off with the content dot, not the content, the manifest.xml. This is essentially your table of contents of what's in the document. And when writing a program, you want to start with that so you know what to look at. So I'm just going to load that up. Scroll over. These are each of the manifest entries. And for each one, it's given a media type and then a path within the zip to where it is. So we can see, you know, open document text is the root. Let's find an example. The formula, you know, that's the defined ODF content type for embedded formulas. You can see that's object one. So let's go back to our zip file. And if we sort this by path, we see object one has a settings and a content.xml. I go to the content.xml, let's just pre-print this, and this is just a MathML document. Go to ODF and say, let's look at the main content.xml in the root, pre-print it, and we declare all our namespaces, obviously. I'll show you a couple things here, but I'll just skip up the styles for now. Okay. That's showing up there. So here's our standard text. This is an example of default text. It has a style associated with it called standard. And when we put the heading text, we declare it to be heading text. So that's just standard separation of attributes and styles from the actual content. Notice in the original document, I didn't always do styles. Sometimes I overrode the styles and just said, you know, this is a style override. What happens in that case is we still preserve the separation, but we create a style on the fly, and that's stored up at the top of the document in what we call automatic styles. So here we say we're starting with the body text, this is style, and then we give the name of the automatic style, and then we say override. So we're still preserving the difference. I'll show you the hyperlink we had there, because that's an interesting distinction. So this is just using xlink href. And so this is very familiar to people who are, you know, this style of what we call mixed content is very familiar to XHTML, HTML programmers. Let's look at the same thing in Office Open XML. Same thing, type of thing for a manifest file. You start in content types. You see where things are defined. What I'm looking at. First difference you'll know is much shorter names, and this is probably done for, or at least intended to improve performance by using short one and two letter names for attributes. You have a body, you have paragraphs, you have text runs, text, properties, styles. What you see that you don't see in ODF is this revision ID that's associated with every run of text. You'll see that repeated over and over again. Presumably this is used internally for doing version tracking and saying when, you know, everything that was saved in the same session or edited in the same session will have a unique, the same unique ID for this. And presumably if you edited it in another session, the parts that changed would have an updated ID. Let's pull out the part that did the style override, and I'll show you the difference there. So this is a style, and then you can see override, they've actually put in markup for bold, italics, and underline. So that's not separated out into its own unique style. It's essentially mixing the attributes in with the markup. The MathML, ODF added as a separate document. They don't use MathML, they use this thing called Office Open Math Markup Language. It's in line in the document. I don't know which way to think of it. It's, do you put everything in one big document or do you separate parts out? I prefer to see the MathML in a separate document because it makes it easier to update it separately, but that could be a matter of taste. One thing you will not find in this document is the hyperlink text. So the hyperlink text here is defined. It's actually put outside as this RLD8. So it's actually stored in a separate document you would have to load to resolve it. And I believe it is. Let's take a look at this one. Yeah, you have to look back at the manifest, but it's stored in a separate file, so the links are separate. You see a similar thing, footnotes are separate, endnotes, headers, you know, each of these things in its own XML. So I have a single footnote here, you can see it in a separate file. Now this is an example of a footnote. So that's the quick tour. Images, obviously no one's going to mess around with the Olay embeddings on either format or an embedded JPEG file. The best you can do is punt on that and store it as a binary blob in the zip file and deal with it that way. So any questions on that? I'd be happy to take questions on anything in the presentation,
have you got an idea why they're separating the hyperlinks? It might be, my first idea was about, okay, you know, where the references are, about control or something.
Yeah, if I had to guess, it would probably be because in the Microsoft software stack, a hyperlink is a specific example of a more general concept that could encompass Olay links, DDE, you know, links of a bunch of different kinds, and maybe they had some technical reason why they needed to separate that into its own file. I mean, I don't know for sure. But, and you notice, like, whenever you're in Word and you insert a link, it gives you a broader choice of things you can link to than just a URL. Mm-hmm. And that's if I had to guess.
Okay.
I think, I mean, there's some nice things about storing it in the document. Now, I mean, the type of debate we're having in you know, the metadata TC is the hyperlink that you link to, would that be metadata, and should metadata be in the document, or should it be in a separate document pointed to by the main document, or should it be in a separate document pointing into the main document? You know, RDF allows you to express kind of all those different type of things, and that's one thing we're looking at for OpenOffice.
What I saw is that Microsoft OpenOffice they did that on purpose. I'm completely convinced they want to confuse people into believing that it's the same thing, that they should stick with Microsoft. In any case, the Office Open XML file has much more cryptic references to the style that this has to be applied to the content, and whereas the ODF file is much more verbose and human readable. Is that I couldn't see any real, you know, you can't infer or interpret visually or as a human what is going to happen to the text.
This is an obvious.
Could you comment on that, please?
Yeah. So the question about kind of the human readability part of it, I mean, let's be honest. Neither formats were created by complete idiots. They were designed to meet a specific design goal, and both sides put smart people behind it. And I assume both sides hit the goal they were trying to achieve. I'll grant that. And the question I have is the larger issue is what was that goal they were trying to achieve, and does that goal mesh with what customers, open source developers, governments, stuff like that are looking for, or does it meet a very kind of broken goal? The human readability side, I agree, by using, it comes down to the reuse of standards. When you reuse existing standards, you're not just reusing a specification, you're reusing the experience, the knowledge, the intuitivity. I mean, I think if resurrected someone from 1965 and just showed them XHTML, they'd be bewildered by it. But because we have all that experience with these markups, the way ODF does it looks very familiar because it is very familiar. I think that's a positive thing. Reuse the knowledge we have out there in the community. Is there another question here?
I thought about the metadata that's in the Office Open was just structured as a reference in numbers. What's the way of the ODF format to do the same thing?
For which one?
For the Microsoft Word implementation, it was in numbers, the reference, so they could track differences between documents. And I just wonder what were the method for the ODF format to do the same thing.
I do not know offhand. I did not have any change tracking enabled in OpenOffice when I did this.
Mm-hmm.
So it obviously wasn't tracking anything. But the question is, what would it have tracked if I did have change tracking on it, and I don't know offhand. Is that something, Michael, do you know offhand?
Yeah, it's a mixture. We on the one hand, store the use change tracking, store the document in any case in the, let's say, last version. So everything that has been added is in the real document, and everything that has been removed has been in the same stream, but put separate from the content.
In a separate file?
Not in a separate file, but in a separate section of the content. So if you read the body of a document, you get the last version of the author. Mm-hmm. And we are using IDs to get the cross-reference where something is added or has been deleted and things like that.
I see.
But we are not adding any unnecessary IDs. So only if there is a reason that a certain place has to be marked, then there is an ID there.
Any other questions back there? Speak up a little bit.
Sorry, one quick comment and a question.
Sure.
One was that they didn't name it maliciously, at least as far as I can tell. They screwed up themselves a lot. I'd say maybe 10% of their slides got backwards all the time. You kind of could laugh at that. But actually, my question was on the documents that you sucked down from the ECMA site. Were those all Word documents, or were there any spreadsheets in there?
Those were all Word documents. I think it would be an interesting exercise to do. I went to a test where I mixed documents on the same chart because they're probably very different type things. But you can imagine a similar test with Excel documents. The specific kind of quality about that particular corpus of documents is TC45 doesn't do a lot of calculations in spreadsheets. It's mainly spreadsheets for, as a miniature database for tracking open issues. So it may not be that reflective. Any other questions?
All the information that we can put in one format, we put in the other format.
Could you repeat the question?
I heard a lot about that all documents can be put into ODF. I'm wondering if all documents in ODF can be put into Power XML and vice versa?
All ODF? Yeah, I mean, that comes down to the question of the Venn diagram. You have these two formats, and they have kind of are we talking about this, where this is OpenOffice XML, and this is ODF? Or are we talking about something like this? Or are we talking, what is it? I don't think anyone's done a formal analysis, but I know for sure there are definitely things that are expressed today in Office and Word that probably are not expressible in ODF is in the markup that's there. And there's probably things in ODF and Word and Open Office that can't be done directly in ECMA. So my guess is it's something closer to that second diagram. Anything else? Well, thank you for your time then.